Thanks, Andrew. That was a great reminder. I just want to share quickly from Psalm 3 and then some of the story or what was going on at that time around it, and just a few things that stood out to me. I was listening to something this week, and the speaker said that most of the Psalms written by David were written largely before he came king, and I didn't test that out. I haven't done a study, so I'm just going off of what was told to me, but it resonated because many of the Psalms we know of were times when he was troubled and chased and hiding in caves, or definitely some of the ones that are most common, we can say for certain, were when before he was king, he was just in lots of trials, completely dependent on God, with the leader of Israel trying to kill him, or other kings threatening him, or realizing he couldn't trust other kings and stuff. So then I was reading through, I'm reading through the Psalms, and I've gotten to Psalm 3 so far, so pretty early on. But I was noticing Psalm 3 was a psalm from actually well into David's time as king. Many things have happened. It's a psalm that he wrote to the Lord, inspired by the Holy Spirit, after he'd been king for a long time, after he'd fallen greatly with Bathsheba, and now he's reaping some of the consequences of that. The consequences were told to him that the child that they had would die, but also that there was going to be difficulties in his own household because of the sin he committed. And so now he's experiencing some of these difficulties. Absalom has risen up, which I'm going to get to. His son has risen up and stolen the hearts of the people, such that the nation of Israel now has been deceived into wanting Absalom as their king, thinking that it would be better if Absalom was their king. And David is now on the run because of that. So I'll just read a few verses at the start of Psalm 3 and then just share a couple verses from the testimony of what happened and how it kind of ties, how we can kind of mesh the two together and I think learn some lessons. It says in Psalm 3 verse 1, it says, "O Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising up against me. They are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God." And I'm not going to read it all, but if you read the account, it's primarily in 2 Samuel 15. David at this point flees Jerusalem with 600 men. And that can sound like a lot, but you have to contrast that with the nation of Israel is now against him. So he's got 600, but the nation is with Absalom. And so he's completely outnumbered. And those who are observing from the outside would definitely be saying that God, not even God, could save David in this situation, that there is no hope. Or I would go so far as to say God has deserted David. I think some would have said that as well, that God has abandoned the king and God is perhaps now with Absalom, because we see the strength and the sort of almost miraculous strength that Absalom has come into. But David's response to this starts in verse 3. He says, "But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the one who lifts my head. I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and he answered me from his holy mountain. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustains me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me round about." And I think that is his experience. Like, you don't have the numbers with Absalom, but I think that's it. Like, he's saying, like, he's, because he trusts in God, he's got his 600 men, but he's saying, "God, I'm not relying on those 600 men. I'm thankful that they're loyal to me, but my only hope and my only trust is in you, God. And what's more, I'm not even going to be afraid if 10,000s of people," so 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, however many thousands he's thinking of, or the however many would be applicable in that situation, he says, "I'm not going to be afraid because I'm trusting in you, God. So let's turn to 2 Samuel 15, and I just want to read a few verses there, because I think what was standing out to me was we see in the psalm his faith. Like, he's speaking by faith. He's acknowledging the situation, but speaking by faith, saying, God, I'm not going to be afraid. I'm going to trust in you. But I think it's interesting to mesh that with how he's talking in 2 Samuel 15. And I'm just going to, it really goes through almost three chapters, and I'm just going to read a few verses here. But the first two verses I want to read are in 2 Samuel 15, verse 25. I'll read verse 24. It says, "Now behold, Zadok, who is the priest, and the Levites with him, Zadok came and all the Levites with him, carrying the Ark of the Covenant of God. And they set down the Ark of God. And Abiathar came up until all the people had finished passing from the city. The king said to Zadok, 'Return the Ark of God to the city. If I find favor in the sight of God, then he will bring me back again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he should say thus, I have no delight in you, behold, here I am. Let him do to me as seems good to him.'" And I guess I was struck by, you could almost, if you read this in isolation, it would almost seem kind of, maybe it wouldn't seem like faith. Like, it's almost like, well, if God helps me, if he doesn't, he doesn't. But if you mesh it with what we read in Psalm 3, what was coming into my heart is, in these words, we see David now back in a place, which I think is characteristic of many of the Psalms, where he is completely dependent on God. There's nothing in his own resources that he can rely on. And he's saying, and when I read this in that light, I read it not as a man who's saying, I don't know what God's going to do. It's a man who's saying, like, I'm totally dependent on you, God. Whatever you do, and whatever you allow, and whatever the outcome is, it's going to be because it's from your hand. Because of myself, there's nothing that I'm going to do to get myself out of this situation. And I think he did have hope, that he was believing that he would be back and would see the ark again, and both it and God's habitation in the temple. But he had also accepted that, you know what, God? It's going to be what seems good to you that's going to happen here. And I guess for myself, I was just thinking about these situations that we come into and different things that can trouble us. And they can seem so minor, but for myself, I was just thinking, like, I can even just think back over the past month, and there's been a few little things that came up. I can think of one day where I was under some stress, and then somebody sent me something, and it was kind of bad. Well, it was bad news to me. It wasn't what I wanted to hear. And I just remember how, after I got that news or that information, there's some things that came up in the home, and I was so stressed that I was, like, short with Madison and just like completely overwhelmed by this situation. And I was just, like, reflecting on these things, going, you know what? There was grace there that I could have handled this and just entrusted myself to God, saying, God, I don't like this situation. This news does seem bad. I'm not going to call what is not great news good news. But to be able to come to a place where we trust God and say, God, and what's more, David doesn't have some of the promises we have. I was thinking about this as well. In the new covenant, we have the promise that God will use everything in our lives for our good. If we love him and our desire is to be like him and to be sanctified, we have the promise that everything in our lives will be used for good. David didn't, that was a new covenant promise. David may have known it in some sense in his heart because he was near to God and had a heart after God, but we actually have that promise to further rely on. It's a better promise. There are better promises in the new covenant, and we're given that one. So how much more when a situation comes that troubles us, that we could just put ourselves in a place where we can just say, because my mind immediately went to trying to solve this thing, trying to make it better, and I was struggling to find ways to make it better or solve it, and that was irritating me and getting me upset. Rather, I just feel like there's a lesson here if we can apply it and make it real in the situation when it comes, just how David really cast himself on God and said, God, this is horrible, but I trust in you. Whatever you allow, whatever seems good, that's what's going to happen. And he was completely cast on God. So next one I want to read is in chapter 16. We read in chapter 16, verse 7, we got Shimei, and he curses David. He says, Shimei said when he cursed, get out, you man of bloodshed. This is 2 Samuel 16, verse 7. You man of bloodshed and worthless fellow. The Lord has returned upon you all the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. And behold, you are taken in your own evil, for you are a man of bloodshed. And then Abishai wants to go and kill Shimei. And then David responds in verse 10. He says, but the king said, what have I to you do with you, O sons of Zariah? Zariah, it's referring to Abishai, who wanted to go kill him. Now speaking of Shimei, he says, if he curses me, and if the Lord has told him curse David, then who shall say, why have you done so? Then David said to Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my son who came out from me seeks my life. How much more now this Benjamite? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him. Perhaps the Lord will look on my affliction and return good to me instead of his cursing this day. So again, we see even more clearly how David was at this time, because he was brought to a place of total dependence on God, he just was able to accept what came. Those who were more carnal, those who were less, were not in the same place as David, were like, let's go kill this man because he's cursing you. And David's like, why am I going to exert my power to kill this weak little man when I've got tens of thousands coming after me and I need God to deliver me? Why am I going to go try and let my anger at this little situation, this little man, cause me to reach out and do evil to him when I need God to deliver me from Absalom, my son, who has come from my wounds and that womb, or my womb, from me, and now seeks to kill me with all these tens of thousands? Why am I going to go and let the situation cause me to harm this person? And I just see David again just completely dependent on God, and he even comes to the place where he says, this cursing is probably from God. And this is completely me, but I just was thinking, as David was hearing these curses about being a man of bloodshed, and with everything that was happening, I couldn't help but wonder if his mind went to Uriah, right? Like, went to the man he'd killed in the sin with Bathsheba. He's like, he may have realized that Shimei was a little off in calling him a man of bloodshed because of what had happened to Saul, but I believe, potentially, given where he's at and given he's now in a place where he's calling on the Lord and is drawn near to God because it is a time of trouble, I wouldn't be surprised at all if when he heard those words about bloodshed, he was remembering in his head, yeah, I am a man of bloodshed. I am. Not necessarily because of what happened with Saul, but I have sinned greatly and I have shed innocent blood. And if God is allowing me to be cursed this day, and if all of this calamity that's coming upon me is all tied to what I've done, my only hope is from God. And then you see that in verse 12, he says, perhaps the Lord will look on my affliction and return good to me instead of his cursing this day. And that, to me, is just an amazing thing. Like, and I say that because I hope for none of us we would ever be in a situation where we're, well, I know for certain we wouldn't be in a situation where David, some of the things that David had done, but I do think we can apply it to situations where maybe we can even say we've made a mess of things, like where we have the problems that are coming upon us and some of the difficulties we're experiencing are because of our own hand. Like, I could even think of examples of, I haven't even experienced it, but like I'll just say this, like maybe there's problems in our family and we can look and see like, God, I messed up. I caused these problems. I can see it. And now there's difficulties coming from it. But the lesson we can learn from David in just that very specific example is that, you know what, God, now I'm humbled. I'm broken before you and I'm leaning on you for deliverance and for help. And I'm going to have hope. Because that was the thing with David is he one thing we see is a testimony throughout his life. He hoped in God. In situations where God was just allowing it, and he was being brought to places of dependence on God because of situations that were outside of his control, or in times even when situations came that were of his own doing. And I would describe this one as kind of his own doing. This is that he's reaping what he sowed in this situation. But even in the midst of it, he both receives the difficulty, he accepts it as from God, and I really see that most clearly with Shimei. He accepts it that this is God has allowed this cursing to come, but he also had hope in the midst of it that said, perhaps God can return good to me instead of his cursing this day. He had a faith that just didn't give up. It was just quite remarkable that instead of despairing and just losing hope at everything was happening here, that he still would hope in God in the midst of this. And I think that's it. I mean, that to me is just the lesson that I was encouraged by in thinking about the psalm. Because I again go back to verse 3, Psalm 3, verse 3, it says, "But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the one who lifts my head." He is just, I don't know, for me, he had come to a place where he was again saying, like, all my power, like the power he had as king and some of the things that I probably allowed him to become complacent, his wealth, his power, all these things, the big army he had, all of those things had now been stripped away. But he'd come to a place where he said, what? The shield that I need around me is God. That's the shield that I need. And the glory that he's seeking and the glory that he wants is not the glory of a rich and powerful king, but he wants the glory of God. He says, the glory I want is from you. My glory is from you, God. Like, I'm extrapolating here, but I'm saying, like, I see he's coming to say that the glory that he desires would be the glory that God gives. Not the glory of wealth and riches and power and all he has as a king, but he does desire the glory of God. And he says, God is the one who lifts my head. And in this situation and in the situations we may find ourselves in, if we're unable to lift our own head because of the discouragement or because of the load in front of us or because of it seeming so impossible that God could deliver us. And my situation, I think it's good when we read these things to think about them in the big sense, like if there's major difficulties and challenges we're facing. But I also think it's good to remember in the small sense too, because like the trial I was describing earlier, it wasn't a big deal. Like, I don't want to make it sound like a major thing, but I look back on it, and it's now probably 3 weeks ago this happened. And I look back on it going, I wish I had responded differently. I wish I had not allowed that trial to bring me to a place where I ended up sinning because of feeling that it was too much or feeling that this, like, just letting the stress and burden of it get to me. Rather, I would have just thrown myself on God and said, God, you can carry me through this. You're going to solve this. And in the weeks to come, and even in some of the responses, I dealt with a few others on it, even just seeing their responses, they didn't get thrown. And I was just like, man, that's just a better way of walking through these difficulties, and a better way to be is to trust the Lord in these things and let him, just believe in him for deliverance and just not allow the armies or the difficulties surrounding us to cause us to fret and to fear. So I think that's it. Maybe just share one last thing is it's just this psalm, it talks about waking and trusting in the Lord and seeing. Basically, he went to sleep and he woke up and the Lord sustains him. And this is just me, but I just kind of wonder if you go back to, you don't even have to turn there, but if you go back to 2 Samuel chapter 17, it's all coming. And they're now, David had one man on the inside, Hushai, who was trying to thwart the counsel of Ahithophel. And basically the warning came, like, you guys need to move now. Like, you cannot even stop for the night, because if they follow Ahithophel's counsel, they're coming for you right away. And so it says in verse 17, verse 22, that David and all the people who were with him arose and crossed the Jordan, and by dawn, not even one of them remained who had not crossed the Jordan. And I was just kind of reflecting, and I don't know if it was, Scripture doesn't say, and I don't even have good reason to think it, but I just was kind of reflecting, like, as David was saying, I awoke and the morning came and I trusted God, and he was the one who was going to deliver me. I laid down and I slept and I awoke and the Lord sustains me. I was just reflecting on that, sort of thinking about, in all of this calamity, they're running through the night and they cross the Jordan and the dawn comes up, and I just was thinking about how David perhaps was inspired in some of this psalm to trust God at that time, that just when it seemed so hopeless, they've had to run all night, and now they're even having to cross a river in the middle of the night and the sun's coming up, just saying, God, you're the one who sustains me. I'm going to trust in you and believe in you and just fully know that in this circumstance that you've allowed, I'm putting myself in your hands. And in doing so, I can have rest and peace in the midst of it. So, yeah. Amen.